Thank you. Hello, everyone. This is Nectar Island. I'm here, Raphael, I'm here with my friends. Everybody needs someone to lean on, and I'm leaning on my friends from H2H, Simon and Steve-O, and also Josh, that's here, like this special guest, special presence that's going to be hearing. Like
the presence in the corner.
The presence in the corner,
mute.
Yes.
He can't speak.
Always yeah. Glad to accommodate.
And also kind of like we don't have Lionel Chauat that's lost in Portuguese seas, and Christian has a job.
Book launch. He's book launching, but
he's kind of the publisher, so he's got, he needs to be there wearing a tuxedo and stuff, and so
is it a tux event? Is it
in my head? Yes.
Okay. Most importantly,
I can't actually picture Christian in a tux, or maybe I can.
No, you know what? Like, yeah, in here he's really cool, but I think like outside he's kind of like, you know, shaking hands, making millions. That's why he couldn't be
kissing
here.
Babies.
So it's up to us to entertain you guys for 1 hour, 1 hour-ish.
Yeah.
We started with Konnichiwa by this guy called Donnie Bennett. He's like a Weird Al Yankovic, but from Australia. He's gonna make a concert here. That's why we started with him in March. The 14th of March in a place called Village. I don't know.
Village Underground?
Village Underground. Yeah.
It's
Village
what,
Underground.
What era is that track from?
No, it's contemporary. It's
it draws from times past.
Yeah,
sure.
That's true. That's it. It's kind of like, you know, it's has the swing, has the moods, you know what I mean? Yeah.
And did you describe him as Australia's answer to Weird Al Yankovic?
Yeah, I think so. No. It's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like the character of the guy, you know, like he kind of like music videos. He just, you know, he's this guy that's, you know, you makes you want to laugh just to look at him. You know what I mean? Like he has this kind of like mustache and kind of like fat belly, and he's playing the saxophone, and it's just a very corny background, like playing in the beach and stuff like that. So
only Australia could produce such an artist.
That's true. And then the Rolling Stones, but also Konnichiwa. What does it mean, Konnichiwa? Konnichiwa in Japanese is like good afternoon, right?
It's hello. It's kind of hello.
Hello.
Here we go. We draw straight into that. Josh can actually read and speak Japanese.
So that's destiny. Konnichiwa. What is konnichiwa?
Hello.
All right. So konnichiwa is hello.
He's getting close to the mic there. His voice is echoing into the mic. He'll be getting closer.
15 years of Japanese lessons that Josh has had, and he knows what hello means.
Can you also write in Japanese or?
A little bit, yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Why? Do you have like?
I just learned it at school, and then that was it.
Oh, so you kind of like the culture and stuff.
Get that mic over.
Come on.
You'll be trying not to get on the mic.
We're going to speak some Japanese today.
I was lucky enough to go.
You need to be closer to the mic.
Closer.
There we are.
I was lucky enough to learn a bit of Japanese at school. But unfortunately, as soon as I went to uni, gave it up and haven't spoken it since.
Do you guys have Japanese in school here?
No, only grammar schools in Kent, I think.
Oh, okay.
Sorry about that.
Cool. Oh, that's really cool, man.
You're apologizing on behalf of the British education system. Wow, that's strong, man.
You know, and that's kind of like a hidden reason as well, because this guy has a concert coming in Konnichiwa, and I have been to an amazing photography exhibition last Friday on the Photographer's Gallery by Daedo Moriyama. It's like a Japanese photographer. Do you know him, Josh? Like, it rings a bell. Then, all right, cool. I haven't heard of him before as well. Like, it's just like my wife is a street photographer, and he is very famous in the street photography. And also, like, it's really good. In the photographer's gallery is.
I'm going to be a bit silly here, but street photography, is it like taking pictures of pavements and roads?
It's almost. Okay. Street photography is kind of like, you know, the photography that it's freestyle photography, basically. Yeah. Like, playing jazz with the camera on the roads.
Yeah.
So it's more like get out with the camera, try to get a good shot of daily daily images, kind of trying to draw beauty from the, you know, day to day, from pavements, from people's and
structures, people, faces. It's a nice wide range of kind of canvases, really.
You know, it started on like, and that's the thing. Like, it started as a. It's kind of like a beat culture kind of thing, you know, like Jack Kerouac, you know, go on the road, do your stuff, you know, just writing poetry on the road and just taking pictures on the road as well. And Daido Moriyama has a book called On the Road. And his most famous picture is of a dog. So it's a stray dog. And it's very kind of, it's really good. And the exhibition is really good. It's on until next Friday. And on Fridays it's free. So if you want to go,
So here we go. I'm going to connect the dots between that and the Rolling Stones, and I'm going to show you how I'm going to do it. So, because you said that street photography came out of kind of like the beat period, right? So there is a famous, not sure whether he would have called himself a street photographer, but a very famous one who took photos in that style called Robert Frank. Mm-hmm. And Robert Frank is also known as the director of a notorious Rolling Stones documentary that didn't get released because it was too graphic and the Rolling Stones wouldn't sign it off for release.
Oh, no, man.
And it's called Cocksucker Blues.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, which is basically...
It's too graphic. Why is it too graphic?
I have it on video, so it's... I don't think it's that yet. I don't think it... But at
never
the time,
to be released or signed off.
So I bought it from a street vendor. Going back to the street. A street vendor. Actually, no, not as my brother gave it to me, but he bought it from a street vendor.
So you have access to it.
On VHS. Like,
oh, okay, that's cool.
So...
YouTube.
They show it from time to time at like in like the ICA and stuff like that. They get permission to do like a one-off. But Robert Frank was a street photographer, so there's a lot of still images in the documentary as well. And it follows them around their Exile on Main Street tour, which we were just talking about earlier. So there's actually some really incredible footage of the support act for the Rolling Stones on that tour, which is none other than Stevie Wonder.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
that's
and some amazing. Pretty incredible footage of, I think, Tina Turner on that tour as well. I'm only pausing for breath because I can't remember if actually the Tina Turner. Yeah, no, I think, yeah, Tina Turner is in it as well.
You know, but you know what? Like, there's a film that has been kind of like in pre-production forever called, it's about the Exile on Main Street recording sessions because they had a house in Italy, I think, right?
No, south of France.
South of France.
Yeah.
So they escaped for tax reasons, right? Like that's,
correct.
Okay. we were talking before that January is just for paying taxes and now the year truly starts, kind of like now it's a new year because, you know, January is kind of like, you know, it's kind of like a hangover month and then tax and then you start the year or something like that.
Well, it's one of those depressing things that people talk about. You know, you get to June and someone says, right, you know, you're earning your own money. And you're thinking, because, you know,
I've not
heard that one.
Yeah. You basically for half the year, you're paying your
the king.
Tax bill.
You're paying the king.
What a guy. He deserves every penny of it. And then you're like, oh, right, okay, I earn my own money now. Yeah. thanks for that stat. That's so really, really
kudos
positive.
For the Rolling Stones to escape it.
Yeah.
And to make like the most, kind of, I think... I don't know. We were talking about that before. Like, which album of Rolling Stones is the best one? I don't know. Exile on Main Street.
I'll say that the Apex Mountain is Beggar's Banquet, Let It Bleed, Exile on Main Street, and I think you throw Sticky Fingers in there as well.
Sticky Fingers, yeah. That's true.
I need to listen to the other two.
Forget Goat's Head Soup.
Oh, that's true. No, it's really good. I think, like...
for the avoidance of doubt, I would not put Goat's Head Soup in those four. It is a good record, though.
But you know what? Like, Keith Richards, he has this, his self-biography, autobiography, right? His called Life. I think it was released 10 years ago or something.
Was it that long ago?
I think
ago?
So, yeah. I think so. And in there, he's saying that they don't play Exile on Main Street songs on concerts because they don't know how to. Kind of like, he forgot how to. He forgot.
That's rock myth. I've seen the Rolling Stones. They've played a few Exile on Main Street tracks.
Yeah.
They play Tumbling Dice. He plays Happy, which is off Exile. Those are probably, to be honest, in fairness, those are. I've heard them play rocks off. I can imagine that there's some that they don't remember how to play.
And he said like, and he also said that Mick Jagger doesn't want to play them because actually Exile on Main Street is his album, like Keith Richards' album. Like he was the one that kind of like pulled the album forward,
right? Okay.
Because Mick Jagger was just kind of like drunk all the time and just kind of like wasted, and
Keith wasn't.
He was, but he was functional.
Right. Oh, okay.
that's the stuff that legend is made for.
I guess we all have our own perspective. And Keith certainly has his.
That's true.
There's one other link between those two songs.
Hello.
I learned Japanese. Mm-hmm. My school, Dartford Grammar, which is where Mick Jagger went to school.
Okay.
Oh, wow. Six degrees of the Rolling Stones. That's the theme. The theme is just falling into our laps.
It all falls into
our laps. 6 degrees of the Rolling Stones.
You know what? It was not planned at all, but that's even better. Now, so talking about kind of like, okay, music documentaries or still photographies or all this kind of stuff. Like, coming back to Eido Moriyama, like he used to say that, and that's kind of like a theme as well, because we spoke last time about the Herzog on the BFI, like the Werner Herzog.
Yeah.
So I went with Christian to watch the documentary, the
Fitzcarraldo documentary.
No, the Revolutionary Dreamer. So it's about like the life of Werner Herzog, okay. Basically. And it's really good. It's kind of like the guy is, you know.
Intense,
yeah, say the least. And but you get out of there, like, say, okay, so yeah, now it's time to make films and stuff. And he says something in the documentary that, you know, the world reveals itself for those who walk on foot. So he always has his ideas of films and stuff while walking, and he's like a pretty intense hiker as well. So he walks like 30 kilometers and stuff. And Eido Moriyama says kind of the same. He said like he rather sleep in cheap room hotels than to have kind of like to come back to his wife with homemade meals, because then he keeps on his foot, on kind of like my creation comes from the roads.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that has something to do with, I don't know. Like about the creative process at all, like, you know, like when seeing other things, you kind of like re-energize yourself and kind of
stripping
keep
things
moving
back to basics. And like, you know, I mean it sounds ridiculous, but you know, doing DIY around the house outside, you know, just climbing a ladder, you know, I remember as a kid I used to do loads of thinking when I was creosoting the fences. Mm-hmm. You know, you think about so many things because you're just kind of outdoors in this kind of basic environment.
I don't even know what creosoting means. I'm serious.
I'm nodding, but I don't know as well. Yeah, like, yeah, explain, please.
Okay, but you can't use it anymore. It's illegal. It's poisonous.
So explain.
It says a lot.
So it sounds like real value-adding activity there.
Yeah, Dad poisoned me slowly but surely. It's a cure that you put into wood fences to protect them from the weather. Right. And you used to paint it on. It was like a bucket. And, you know, this is living in the middle of Scotland, in the middle of nowhere, growing up as a kid. That's the entertainment I got on the weekends.
Was sniffing those fumes.
High as a kite. So that manual task, repetitive task, it might have been trimming the hedges. It might, whatever it might be.
You know, Wittgenstein used to say that philosophy is closer to gardening than anything else.
Yeah.
So take care of your garden, basically. Like Voltaire, I think he says as well. Like, okay. You know, philosophy is kind of like it's a big.
I like to compare myself to Voltaire.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you have the same. You are drawn like you're kind of like, you know, drinking from the same wheel, man, yep. From the human race.
Agreed. Hands in the soil, feeling the earth through up in my body. It's amazing.
Yes, yes. Let's go for intermission now. Like,
too much
philosophy
on that image.
But you know what? Like this one also has a meaning. Like there is a documentary about a band called Simandi. Have you ever heard about these guys?
Yeah.
Okay, Simandi. So we heard. I never heard about these guys. And it's kind of like, they say like, okay, Getting It Back is the name of the documentary, because they were, I think, excluded from the musical scene back in the day.
I don't quite know the story. I just know that their album, like. The first album, whatever, is like up there as a classic, you know, that like a lot of people, a lot of music makers will kind of refer back to the album.
So that's kind of one of the things of the documentary as well, because I was in the Bertha Dock. Have you heard about this place? It's a screen in close to Russell Square called Bertha Dock Screen. It's like the only, it's it's completely dedicated to documentaries in central London. I think it's the only screen in London that is only documentaries. It's really good. It's kind of like, so it's kind of hidden, but it's a small screen, you know. And I was there today watching a documentary about Bossa Nova, and they played the trailer for Simande, and I think like Lionel is a guy that's kind of like championing these films.
He's
like,
our advocate.
Yeah, he's an advocate. Yeah, yeah. He just discovered Simande. Said like, I never heard about these guys before, but they're really good, and he sent us music to play. So let's play it, and then we'll be back.
Thank you. Global controls will have to be imposed, and a world governing body will be created to enforce them. Crises precipitate change.
Secretly plotting your demise. I want to devise a virus to bring dire straits to your environment. Crush your corporations with a mild touch. Trash your whole computer system and revert you to papyrus. I want to make a super virus strong enough to cause blackouts in every single metropolis. Cause they don't want to unify us, so fuck it. Total anarchy and can't nobody stop us. You see, late in the evening, fucked up on my computer and my mind starts roaming. I create like a heathen. The first cycles of this virus I can send through a modem. Infiltration hits your station. No Microsoft or enhanced DOS will impede. Society thinks they're safe when bingo, hard drive crashes from the rending. A lot of hackers tried viruses before. Vaporize your text like so much whiteout. I want it where file replication is a chore. Lights out, shut down entire White House. I don't want just a bug that could be corrected. I'm erecting immaculate design. Break the nation down section by section. Even to the greatest minds, it's impossible to find. I want to devise a virus to bring dire straits to your environment. Crush your corporations with a mild touch. Trash your whole computer system and revert you to papyrus. I want to devise a virus to bring dire straits to your environment. Crush your corporations with a mild touch. Trash your whole computer system and revert you to papyrus.
I have already planned. The plan is programmed into every one of my 1,000 robots. We will not hesitate. We will destroy the Homo sapiens. Please stay where you are.
I wanna develop a super virus. Better by far than that old Y2K. This is 3030, the time of global unification. Break right through they terminals, burn them all. Slaves of silicon, corrupt politicians with leaders and their keywords. FBI and spies stealing bombs. Dissipate their plans in their face and catch the fever. Everybody loot the stores, get your canned goods. Even space stations are having a hard time. Peacekeepers seek to take our manhood, which results in the form of global apartheid. Ghettos are trash dumps with gas pumps. Exploded and burnt out since before the Great Union. The last punks walk around like mass monks, ready to manipulate the database or break through them. Human rights come in 100th place. Mass production has always been number one. New Earth has become a repugnant place, so it's time to spread the fear that's fun to some.
Too long have we tried to extend our glorious empire out to the stars. To be driven back.
I want to devise a virus to bring dire straits to your environment. Crush the corporations with a mild touch. Trash the whole computer system and revert you to papyrus. I want to devise a virus to bring dire straits to your environment. Crush the corporations with a mild touch. Trash the whole computer system and revert you to papyrus.
Hey, we're back at Nectar Allen, and our conversation off mic was really good. We're just talking about, you know,
what is it we said?
We started like it's with the Rolling Stones, and then now AI and the algorithms deciding what we're gonna be the next hit song.
Yeah,
and then Steve, what's your input into it?
My input was that I'm not so sure that AI will be able to figure out the kind of the code or the algorithm to be able to produce hit songs every time, because people have been having a crack at music long before AI came. And I think if there was a code to crack, it would have already happened. And it doesn't, because I think there's an artistic, there's a creative thing that, you know, an X factor or an element. But Simon, I think you were going to speak on that in terms of
how do you recreate, or how do you create binary code for a feeling you feel in your stomach, you know, a sensation that you get linked to a multitude of factors around you. It was interesting. So Ollie, who was with us 2 weeks ago to sort of work out the show, well, oddly enough, I've been in the studio once a week for the last 3 weeks because I was supporting Ollie last week on his show. And he was exploring, and his show is called Duende, D-U-E-N-D-E. And essentially, it's a philosophy.
You're philosophical tonight.
Yeah, I'm feeling that. A philosophy. I should sit back. Cigarette, coffee. a philosophy that linked to kind of the emotion that certain types of music, particularly darker music and darker tones, create this kind of feeling within you. And it was written by some Argentinian philosopher linked to music back in the 1930s. And there were a series of lectures that he gave about duende this concept of duende. It's worth looking up. And the idea is you listen to a piece of track and you go, that's got duende, because it's kind of like those darker jungle tracks evoke a sort of feeling or a sensation, or those sounds and I'm just saying, for the music I sort of most passionate about, those big bass lines, those sounds that come through in a track, and you go, oh, that's good, you know. But it could be a chord structure, let's say in a film score, that you know, goes down
descending
chords, or potentially a stab or something,
or
within
a sound mix
that gets you in your stomach.
There's a scene on Raging Bull that we use a lot as a example of like the perfect sound mix, in the sense of like have you guys seen Raging Bull?
Yeah.
Cool. So there's this fight that De Niro is kind of like getting beaten up by this guy, his opponent, and
Sugar Ray Robinson.
Yeah, Sugar Ray Robinson. Yes, yes. And there is a moment there where the filmmaking becomes non-realistic and goes towards kind of like the last punch Sugar Ray Robinson gives to it's kind of like a slow motion, and kind of like the Sugar Ray Robinson becomes something else, becomes the Minotaur, in a sense, becomes kind of like the slow train coming, the inevitable defeat. And in that punch, instead of going realistically, it goes non-diegetic, and he puts kind of like winds and hurricane sounds and a roar of a lion and a lot of things in the sound mix.
Wow. Right, okay.
It makes you feel like you are being hit by nature itself.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like, that's really nice. Good.
So and back to that kind of point on AI is, how do you recreate something like that in a sound, you know, in something that is so emotional? And music is emotional. It's from the earth. It's, you know, originally made from natural things being knocked together by people that feel that they need this rhythm and this pattern. You know, it's something that most people, I can't say everyone, most people need it. You know, most people need it to feel alive. It's actually a uniquely kind of human, really interesting, a condition.
It almost wakes you up, right? It almost shows you something that you don't know about yourself, in a sense. Like when you are kind of like Spinoza, we are philosophical tonight. So kind of like Spinoza used to say that when you fall in love with an object, it can be kind of like a book, a novel, or a poem, or something like that. You are also modified by the object, and that's kind of like the ethical of passion is that if you're passionate enough by something, this will change you forever. So you're gonna carry this with you forever. So that's the way kind of like you, and that's kind of like that's the thing. Like you need to know what you're passionate about in a sense. Like what can change you down the line, and you have to always go towards that thing, that's art for you. That's kind of like something that opens your eyes, basically.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
And also, like, I think the case against AI.
Who's the philosopher?
It's Baruch Spinoza. Spinoza was a Portuguese philosopher, but he was eradicated in Deutschland.
Okay.
We say Deutschland here or not?
Germany.
No, Holland.
The Netherlands.
Netherlands. Okay, sorry, I'm just confused.
Yeah, no,
but yeah, so he is considered kind of like Portuguese and Deutsch. Deutsch? Holland?
Dutch
philosopher in Holland. Yeah, Portuguese philosopher. And that kind of like, he has this kind of like relationship with nature as well. And he is considered also the first atheist in a sense of like he doesn't think about God as a moral figure. He thinks about God as nature. So it's your connection with nature that changes you.
Yeah. That's me. Yeah. I really wish I was drinking. We can get a little bit loose, and I wish Lebby was here as well.
But no, I think like the ultimate case against AI is like the thing is that it's just like the filmmaking business, like the industry is all kind of like, you know, it's frightened about. Okay, so now we're gonna have like the machine is gonna replace us. But the case is that the machine is never gonna make something that doesn't exist yet. And I think art is about the zeitgeist, it's the spirit of time. So we have to feel the pulse of time. And the machine is just gonna show you things that have already been successful before. So it's not advancing the language in any way.
Yeah.
And art is to get the language forward. I know that like screenwriters are saying, but I just want to write an episode of ER or so. ER doesn't even exist. What exists nowadays? Like a soap opera or something. That's easily.
All I can think of is the shows that my kids watch.
Coronation Street. Okay, so.
AI will never replace Coronation Street.
I never watched it, but I know that's something that has like 400 episodes or 4,000 episodes.
Yeah.
So.
Is it still going?
I think so.
As far as I know. Yeah, as far as I know.
EastEnders still going?
Yeah.
So
I think it all comes down to like the heart and soul, right? Is that all elements of music and art is about heart and soul of someone. And as soon as you put a machine behind that, even if it could be the best score in the world, there's no heart or soul behind it.
It's too precise.
That's what people are after, right? Is that they're after that kind of consciousness, heart leading.
I think actually, like, what people are after is just easy money, in a sense. Like, just scrap the writers and just gonna make something that works every single time. And I don't know, like, they have a case for it because, like, in the last, as I said, like, you know, we are in a world post Barbie, you know, God knows what's gonna happen, like in the next, or Super Mario Bros. The movie or something like that, you know, like this kind of like.
It's but Barbie didn't even get nominated for an Academy Award, so that Barbie's time is over. Huh?
Oh my God! But it was like he had a backlash for not being nominated for an award, so it's kind of like the public is asking for it.
I thought it was a really good movie.
You know, I think so too, but it's not $2 billion movie. You know what I mean? Like because they're like just going through the same notes. In the sense of like they're Ooh. Playing on nostalgia, they're playing on. Don't you think so?
There's heart in the Barbie movie because people were invested in Barbie, right?
Yeah.
So I think there's definitely a nostalgia to it, but I think it brings something new to the story. Certainly in terms of you know, questions of kind of gender and identity, and you know, the role of a woman. So I think that those are very kind of more modern narratives, certainly in the kind of here and now. So there is a nostalgia to it, but a very different movie could have been made that would have been just pure nostalgia and would have been really poor.
Yeah, I know what you mean. But I'm just gutted that in a sense of like, I don't know. I just kind of like
embrace,
you know,
the Barbie.
I am keen enough, right? I just like, you know, what I mean is that I could see the machinery behind it on the marketing side, on TikTok and whatever, building the algorithms towards Barbie and towards like Super Mario Bros. The movie, and creating kind of like a feeling of like a FOMO feeling, like a fear of missing out, like, oh, we have to watch this, you have to, and like people,
but that's existed way before TikTok. I know, but
now it's kind of like, it's different because now it's coming from a place that you don't realize it's marketing, you know what I mean, like the new generation doesn't realize that it's marketing in a sense, like it's not an outdoor, it's kind of like, it's in a sense they're paying influencers, like Barbie was a $25 million movie, they spent $150 million in TikTok advertisement, so it's like seven times the movie, in a sense of like never has been done before. Actually, like the marketing is like one third of the movie tops, but they don't. They want, like, they didn't go for outdoors or for traditional marketing. They went just for influencers, and the influencers really influenced people to kind of like, and really brought light to questions that are not really there in the movie. I know what you're saying, like about gender questions and all, but that was in the social media, not in the movie itself. If you watch the movie without being kind of like, you know, fed by the marketing before.
I don't know about that, because there's the whole question.
I've not seen it, so I can't.
There's the whole kind of role of Ken, and then Ken goes out of the Barbie world and then kind of takes on this kind of hyper-masculine, aggressive masculine identity.
I know.
And then brings that back to Barbie. So I think it was definitely in the movie.
it is, but is it new? You know what I mean? Is it kind of like something that is like $2 billion new? What do I mean?
I think it's
pushing forward stuff?
Well, yes, I think it is. I think it's taking some of the narratives that are happening in the zeitgeist, which you said earlier, you know, and kind of making people think about it more. And, you know, it may not be new to, you know what, you may be very lucky and all these themes are not new to you because you've been immersed into them. But I'm sure there's plenty of people who've seen that movie, seen as it made $2 billion, who probably had their eyes opened a little bit on some of the things.
My feeling about it is just like, I don't know, just I know you're just talking about Barbie for 20 minutes.
I'm just loving the range of subjects today.
No, it's good. It's really cool. Yeah, that's cool. That's Nectar Ellen for you, you know, like lots of stuff. But like, what I think is that from my view, like from my two cents, I think it's more about design, and that's the thing, like, the zeitgeist is one thing that you don't know you want it. And Barbie for me is kind of like a hashtag movie that is just like every mark was hit. In a sense of like, okay, Greta Thunberg, two A-list actors, blah, blah, blah. And then $2 billion. And then marketing, a lot of marketing.
It still feels like it could have been a disaster.
Yeah.
And it wasn't.
Let's see the next ones. Let's see, like, the next ones that is going to be, of
Cindy?
Course, Barbie 2.
Cindy the movie?
Or Cindy the movie. Cindy the movie is going to be great.
Ken's Revenge.
Yeah.
No, of course they're going to have, like, Barbie 2 and Barbie 3. Like, it became a franchise, just like John Wick. Just saying, like.
Okay, so that, I guess we'll have to come back to that, comparing John Wick to Barbie, but that's interesting.
All right. Yeah.
We'll see.
You know, yeah, they opened the floodgates for something bigger. Okay, intermission, and we'll be back soon.
Some more music.
So we're back. We're almost done. We're almost across the finish line. It's almost 8. And I'm going to leave you guys with the H2H crew. There's going to be dance music? No.
It's usually dance music.
No. What is the team? Team for tonight?
House music all night
house
long.
Music
yeah, yeah but
yeah.
like you know
it's
really
always dance music
but yeah listen I mean it's you know within with I like with everything within that genre there are multiple genres this is house with a capital H
bit of house therapy
it's you know I've steered away from personally here we go this is where we're gonna have a little like I've steered away from kind
no
of
breaks.
The Detroit house sound I've got a pretty chunky house sound tonight.
Oh, that's cool and looking forward to it we were talking off mic about this film that you guys need to watch, Wim Wenders' film called Perfect Days. I have seen that like 2 weeks ago with the Q&A afterwards with Wim Wenders. It was shot entirely in Tokyo, and the film is always in Japanese.
Josh will understand.
Just what? You understand without
resident
without
Japanese
captions.
Expert.
That's cool. That's really good. Man, I want to speak Japanese. Is it hard?
Yeah.
It's a dumb question, right?
Of course
it's hard.
An answer.
I want to test myself. I want to go to Japan because I have watched kind of like some animes, so maybe I can get around with that just saying like konnichiwa or itadakimasu or
or arigato.
Arigato, yeah. but then like the film is good and the Q&A was even better because then like Wim Wenders was saying that he was after the rap party, he met a guy that, because the film is about a toilet cleaner in Tokyo. So they were kind of like all dressed up as toilet cleaners. Mm-hmm. And the guy saying like, okay, so you're a toilet cleaner. And he said, no, I'm just a filmmaker. I'm making a film and we are rapping. And then the guy said, the guy told him a story about that he was like in his 60s or whatever, and he went to Japan. He was an American. He went to Japan to escape the draft in Vietnam. And then he moved to Japan and he went to train with a Kung Fu master. And then the Kung Fu master said to him, like, okay, but I have a lot of people that want to be my disciples. So I have a test for you. Before being my disciple, I wanted to spend a year cleaning the toilet of the central station in Tokyo. And then you can come back to me. And then if I have patience enough, I will take you as my disciple. And then he spent a year cleaning the toilets. And then come back to me, that's kind of like gardening. You know what I mean? Like you clean your mind by doing kind of repetitive actions and crafts.
And get a bit of hepatitis on the way.
Yeah. and that fit perfectly because it was after they wrapped the movie. But the movie is about that. It's about patience and virtue and kind of like resilience. And also the beauty of simple things, I think. So it's really good. Perfect Days is kind of like, you know, I had a blast. So now we're going to deliver you guys with for the H2H crew.
Oh, yeah, here it is.
Yeah, here it is.
Bells. Thank you very much for having us on Nectar.
Come on, thank you for
allowing us to sit in.
Come on. Thank you, Josh, also for the Japanese culture lessons. See you guys next time. I don't know if I don't have time to play it on the song, right? Like we're gonna go straight to it.
Yeah, we're gonna go straight. We're gonna have a bit of H2H to the bit of the house in the H2H kicking in the back.
We're gonna do a crossover. Yeah, so yeah, H2H, you know, take it on. See you guys next time, and that's it.
Alrighty.